Many of you know that Carl and I have just bought a new house. This was a house that we picked out while walking around the neighborhood where we had our apartment. When we first saw the property, before it was for sale, it was overgrown. You could almost not see the house from the street because of all the plants and vines that had overtaken the house. But by the time the house went up for sale, someone or someones had been hired to clean up the yard so as to make it more attractive to buyers. Whoever those people were, they had neatened up the garden beds and paths by completely scalping the yard, clearing up every last bit of plant life, until all that remained were neatly manicured beds of mulch and gravel paths and some bushes and trees that I assume were too large to move. I'm grateful for the work that they did, but it gave me no idea of what actually lived there. Until this past week, with all the warm weather we've been having, things started to spring to life. Plants began to pop up in the beds. I am frankly a little worried because it seems a little early for this to be going on, but I don't know this area that well. But in one area where I assume the garden cleaner-uppers had no idea what was there, had dumped all this gravel. And last week, bulbs started sprouting up through the heavy asphalt. Despite the wholly inhospitable growing conditions, these bulbs popped up anyway. We see this everywhere. When we walk in cities, largely paved over, we sometimes spot them. Those dandelions, or other hardy, strong flowers, disrupting the otherwise pristine concrete. They have found a way to grow, despite the heaviness of what was meant to stop them. Humans, we, like those dandelions and bulbs, sometimes we experience loss or trauma or held down, physical and emotional pain that feels so heavy that it prevents us from growing, stretching, being the whole person we know we can be. In the 1980s and 90s, there was this experiment. Some of you probably remember it, a life-size terrarium built in the Arizona desert. It was meant to simulate what it might be like to create and live in a human-made ecological system on another planet. It was called Biosphere 2. You can read about it on your own. It still exists in a particular form. But one of the things they learned from the experiment was that trees needed wind to grow. The trees in Biosphere 2 grew faster than trees normally do, but they would topple over before they reached maturity. What they hadn't accounted for in the experiment was wind. It turns out trees need stressors in order to be strong enough to remain upright in maturity. They develop what is known as stress wood or compression wood. In the wild, as opposed to Biosphere 2, trees are constantly being subjected to wind, which causes them to be in motion most of the time. I know you're thinking, Aileen, you spend far too much time with trees. And that's true. But but these stressor woods, their role is to bring the tree back to center when they bend too far in one direction or another. If there is no wind or other stressors, this wood does not develop. So Carl and I have this stand of bamboo trees behind our house. In the wet, heavy snow that fell a few weeks ago, several of them bent so low that they almost touched the ground. When the snow melted, sprung, all but one of them bounced right back up to where they were before. That is the way trees exhibit resilience. The word resilience literally means in the etymological sense, to bounce back. We humans do this also. We all have everyday stressors that enable us to grow. These movements of the wind, metaphorically speaking, we too are in constant motion. We are born, we grow, we are tested in innumerable ways, and we learn. We learn how to react to and bounce back from setbacks, small and large. We learn how to get up again. In her book, The Politics of Trauma, Stacey Haynes writes about resilience. Resilience is our ability to bounce back. It is our ability to come back to ourselves, to connectedness and positive vision, even when the experiences and conditions are difficult. It is our ability to stay connected to hope and goodness and relate this to how we choose to act and decide. Haynes continues, our resilience is part of how we live through very hard moments or times, and is what can support happiness, connection, and well-being. The organization OptionB.org helps people tell their stories and connect with others to build resilience in the face of adversity. One of the stories was the story of a young woman, Sana Mustafa. Sana, at the age of 22, found her life turned upside down. In 2013, she was visiting the United States from Syria on an educational program sponsored by the State Department. While here, she found out that her father had been detained by the Syrian government, and her mother and siblings had to flee to Turkey for their own safety. And she realized she could not go back. It wasn't safe. So she found herself in the United States with a carry-on suitcase. No money, and she knew no one here. Over the course of the next several years, with the help of people in the US, she was able to find a place to live, find work, and eventually apply to college. She said at college she found her voice. I have fought for my survival because of my upbringing. I grew up in a family that was very appreciative, supportive, and determined. She said the only way she found to heal was to become a storyteller, to tell her family's story. She said her role is to give voice to the voiceless. Today, she is part of an organization that helps bring awareness to the global refugee crisis because she knows what it feels like to be a refugee. In The Politics of Trauma, Stacey Haynes also writes about what helps people recover from instances of trauma. And we find these in Mustafa's story. Haynes writes that the three things that help a person most post-trauma are the ability to help other people going through trauma themselves, to make greater meaning and purpose of the experience, and to stay positively connected to at least one other person. And I think we see these things in Mustafa's story as she goes on to bring awareness to the plight of other refugees and make connections with organizations that are doing the same. She gives meaning and purpose to her own experience, even as she helps others make meaning of theirs. Trauma and resilience can be both individual and communal. In his book, The Book of Forgiving, Desmond Tutu of South Africa writes about forgiveness as a means of bouncing back from communal trauma. The convener of the Truth and Reconciliation Council in post-apartheid South Africa, he writes they had a choice of either vengeance or reconciliation. And of forgiveness, he writes, to forgive is not to pretend that what happened did not happen. Healing does not draw a veil over the hurt. Rather, healing and reconciliation demand an honest reckoning. Forgiving requires giving voice to the violations and naming the pains we have suffered. Forgiving does not require that we carry our suffering in silence or be martyrs on the cross of lies. Forgiveness does not mean we pretend things are anything other than what they are. The telling of stories of both perpetrators and victims allowed the communities to heal and reset relationships while not hiding the fact that great harm had occurred. And it also allowed for something new to be born out of the violence. Our Time for All Ages story this morning, The Perfect Square, illustrates this beautifully. Each time the square is broken, it figures out a new way to make that brokenness whole again. It creates a fountain and a park and a bridge and all the other landscapes until it finally realizes the transience of its own perfection and willingly changes itself. We can learn to cultivate resilience. We can practice ways of being resilient, and these are best done when we are not going through something tragic. Stacy Holmes writes, "We are inherently resilient. We are born with an internal capacity to grow and evolve. While learning and growth can sometimes be scary, we thrive in it. We can explore what helps support resilience in ourselves, connection with nature, land, or animals, a deep sense of directly experienced spirituality, art, music, creativity, dance, and play, learning something that brings you joy, experience of loving and being loved. We can visit these resilience practices regularly by ourselves and within community. Every week that we are here together, we do this. We come together in worship and we make connections in community. We are creating a setting for resilience. The sharing of sorrows and joys is a practice of resilience. It is a way for us to give voice to those things that trouble us and that bring us joy. We learn to mourn together and celebrate together." And the Poetry Slam is such a wonderful example of working together, bringing art, as we could see in the back wall, and its many forms into communal activity. Doing this together enables us to heal from those things that trouble us. It enables us to put into words and images deeper feelings and meanings we would otherwise not know how to process. It can give us room to transform experience and make it into something else. These are the cracks in the sidewalk, those places where the light gets in, despite the weight of the sidewalk above us. And I am convinced that sometimes we not only find the cracks, we create them. Dandelions with strength and perseverance not only find the light, they create it by pushing ever so slowly through the solid mass of concrete or asphalt. They create the tension that makes the cracks possible. We too create the tension that makes cracks possible, that creates places for personal and communal transformation after healing, after sorrow, after loss. We find, as those who fought in the civil rights movement often said, we find a way out of no way. That is resilience. Amen and blessed be.